Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
From the palmetto swamps to the piney woods to the oak flats, you're listening to the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast. Come on.
You're listening to the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast, presented by Scree Gear, performance hunting apparel, layering systems. You hear us each and every week talking about Scree, and Christmas is right around the corner, so if you've got your eye on it, I hope you're putting Scree on your Christmas list. And hey, you know, the layering system style of hunting apparel and performance gear that Scree fits into probably works really well right now when it's 80 degrees in December. Throughout most of Louisiana, because you can layer down and be really lightweight, and so many of the pieces that we talk about, the last few times I've hunted, I don't even get to wear them because it's so hot. But that's one of the great things, is you can go and really have one set of gear, layer in and out different ways, and really cover pretty much the whole entire spectrum of the crazy weather we get here in Louisiana. So if you don't have Scree, put it on your Christmas list. Ask somebody to go to ScreeGear.com. Check it out. Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. You can find lots of content to find out more about the gear, and shop online at ScreeGear.com. So it's now December, moving past the Thanksgiving holidays. We are firmly right ass in the middle of rifle season, and it's 80 degrees. Levi and Colin, what's up?
What's going on, man?
Howdy.
Got your Uinta pants?
Yeah. I am wearing my Uinta pants. I went and rode on my e-bike because I didn't want to ride. I don't know. I guess in my mind I thought I was being stealthy. I guess I was being stealthy.
More ninja-like.
So I went and rode around and moved some cameras and checked some stuff, and I was wearing, like, the lightest T-shirt I could find and, like, the Uinta lightweight pants. And I literally felt like the week before opening week of bow season. It was so – not just hot. It was, like, mosquitoes and humidity, and it's just miserable. But with that being said, like, this really is going to go against – people that have listened to this podcast for the last 5 years and – listen to all of my opinions and everything. This right now, what I'm experiencing right now in my home area is the outlier. It is not what typically happens to me, and typically I am out of the woods and not, but I have had more activity and rut activity over the last week than I've seen, and it's not really that out of character for this area. I mean, sometimes it's a week or two earlier or a week or two later, so we're right in that window. But even with the weather, I had bucks on camera on five different cameras last night. I had a buck following a doe in the daylight at 8 o'clock this morning after I slept in because it was 80 degrees. And, you know, it's kind of, I don't know, I guess it, I'm such a weather-dependent hunter in the way that I strategize and hunt that typically I'm completely turned off, and I still am turned off from that aspect. Like, I know I need to be hunting because the deer are on their feet, but it's just so hard to make myself go, you know, just so hard to deal with this weather. I don't feel like I'm going to be able to get away with hardly anything, like from a scent perspective. You know, it's just the south wind, the heavy.
Well, your place is kind of sucks for south.
Oh, everything sucks for south. I mean, it's just really hard. Really, really hard to hunt south wind. And we've talked like a couple of times recently on the podcast about this deer that I've been taking pictures of and talked about, you know, how to hunt him. Well, I've seen him twice now from the stand in the this past week. One time he was following a doe. The other time he was all out chasing her. Like, I only saw him for a second because he was hauling ass through this creek bottom chasing her, dogging her. And it really, nothing has changed in 2 years. He's in the same spot. Now, I did get one picture of him, like, way away. I did it on Onyx, but I was sitting in the stand the other day, and I thought, I wonder how far this is. And so I did the little map line thing, and it was like, oh, hell, I can't remember. It was half a mile or so away. I had a picture of him at 2 o'clock in the morning, a half a mile away, basically on the other side of the property, or mostly the other side of the property. But the next day, he was right back there, and he's been there for the last 3 days. I had a picture of him at 6:15 this afternoon. So, I don't know. I want to tell y'all I'm going to kill him, but I just...
He's there.
I've got a plan. I'm on him. If I had cold weather, I'd tell you I was going to kill him this week.
Yeah, not waiting to execute.
Not even... It is. It's a wait to execute thing, but, like, I really do feel like... I don't even need cold weather. If I just had a 55-degree morning, I think I could kill him with a little east wind.
It's the rut, Locke. It's the rut. Yeah, but dude, you got to be in the tree.
Yeah, you can't kill him from the couch, Levi.
Yeah, you know where you can't kill him from, right?
The couch, exactly.
But I'm going to tell you right. Yes. I'm hunting.
Well, he might almost could.
I could almost kill him.
If it was in his backyard, he could.
I mean, if he wanders too far, I might could kill him from the couch out the back window. But the thing is, what I'm saying is, I don't know if y'all have experienced this. And by the way, our guest is Jeff Kane. Jeff, what's up?
How y'all doing today?
Y'all might recognize Jeff's name. He's pretty active on the on our community page and just Louisiana bow hunter stuff all over Facebook and whatnot. So Jeff's going to join us for this grandeur bullshit session for the night. but maybe so. This
Talking
is my
strategy.
Mm-hmm. So this is my hang up on this deer. Where I'm hunting, dude, it is so tight that, and it's low, kind of swampy in between two thickets, and I've got plenty of shots in there, but I can't, like, access to it is difficult without thinking I'm going to walk past something, and when I get in there, man, it's just like the scent just doesn't get out of there. It just stays in there if I don't have, you know, some high pressure, you know, that kind of stuff. And especially with it, it's like now it's just so, it's not really much wind at all. It's just hardly, it's just sitting there. And I'm just afraid that I know where he's at and I kind of know what he's doing. And I think, but I'm just not sure that I can get a shot on him without him smelling me from pretty much any direction. And I don't.
You're pretty much saying you got to put your big boy pants on.
Just go scare the shit out of him, right?
Just yeah, grow well, I mean, and go
at this
in there.
Point, at this point, it may be time to just kind of work on or try some new things, you know, things that maybe you weren't so prone to do in the past. Like maybe you think you're going to go in there and spook that buck, but maybe you go in there and you actually end up killing him. You know what I mean?
Well,
so.
You can't be scared of that failure. You know, what if you do spook him? You think he's going to run to the neighbors? I doubt it. Now, like, that's how I spent most of my time, you know, hunting deer in the past. I never ran cameras before. I started to this season pretty heavily, but always just hunted off of the sign. I'd go into a piece of public, find the sign, and really the best sign that I like is a fresh pair of tracks. You know what I mean? I don't care about scrapes and rubs and all that if I can just find a fresh pair of tracks, right? And so,
yeah,
I don't know. You know, just use this time, you know, when you're struggling to just maybe try something new and see if you can experience like something different. And, you know, it might be a good learning opportunity for you.
I'm trying to figure out what that is, though.
So, well, let me ask you this.
A bump and dump.
Just go chase his ass down with a Bowie knife.
So this deer is like moving east and west on the transition lot?
He's moving.
Or is he coming from the north from the hardwoods?
Neither. He's coming from the northeast thicket? Corner, that big-ass pine thicket in the northeast corner.
Okay. Well, I was just asking, like, with the south, if you made it in and you didn't spook him and he's, like, on your left or right, would a south still work? It's just blowing in the hardwoods and he's coming, you know, from east and west.
Yeah, so he's coming. What he's doing is he's coming from the northeast, and what he was doing was he was going angling kind of northwest out of that some hardwoods that way and coming back towards the southeast. Now he's going from the northeast and he's kind of moving from the northeast down the corner of that thicket into that creek bottom and up towards the food plot. And I don't really know what he's doing. I mean, it's a huge pine. The plantation's like 7-year-old plantation pines, and I'm sure he's going out in there, but there's a couple food plots. The one I'm getting his picture on, I've actually got the access down in the south. The south wind's actually okay. The problem is I need a steady south wind because I'm right on that creek, or it's really a ditch, but it's so low down. I don't know. It seems that every deer that comes through there starts to get spooky no matter what the wind's doing, unless it's really strong in one direction. And I think it just kind of, the thermals are, I don't know.
Yeah, it's thermals. It's cool down in there, so it's just kind of drawing it down to the bottom.
I think that's what it's doing, because what he's doing is he's coming out of that thicket, and I'm sitting on this ditch, and it winds through there. It's kind of, you know, snakes through there. And he's coming out of the thicket, and he's working up that drainage going north to south. He comes from the northeast, and he hits the drainage, and he goes from north to south. And then I think he comes out and checks those food plots and goes up through the pines, I think is what he's doing. I don't know. That's what I know. I know he does that sometimes. I don't know what else he's doing. And then I saw another shooter the other day that just, I have no idea what he was doing. I heard something coming in front of me running. And he just come, I mean, I don't know if something over there spooked him. I don't know how to explain this. What in the world was that?
That was my phone.
He just come running. Like, I heard a deer running, you know, and I knew it was a deer. I'd been listening to a buck chase a doe in the thicket behind me, and it may have been this deer because he was chasing the doe earlier in the morning. And this deer comes running out of the thicket, busts through the thicket, you know, hits the water in the ditch, and he just hauls ass past me, just running wide open. No doe in front of him or anything, just here he comes, by me, gone. I could hear him running, far as I could hear. I don't know what he was doing. So, I don't know.
Well, one thing that I'm not good at is, you know, patterning bucks or a specific buck. It's not something that I've really got to do in the past. I'm interested in it. But, yeah, that's a whole nother ball game as far as I'm concerned.
Whether it's your hunting truck, the side-by-side you're pulling behind your truck, your home, life, business, or farm, Jake Slocum has you covered. Call or text Jake Slocum at American National Insurance at 318-255-0096 today for a free assessment. Jake Slocum, American National Insurance, more than just your insurance provider. With the rising cost of goods and record-high inflation, wouldn't it be great to save money on your auto insurance? With most companies in Louisiana increasing their rates on auto insurance, American National took a rate decrease. We look out for the best interests of our clients and look forward to earning your trust as well as your business. Call or text Jake Slocum at American National Insurance at 318-255-0096 today for a free assessment. Jake Slocum, American National Insurance, more than just your insurance provider. That's not necessarily my preferred way to hunt, but over the last couple of years, the properties that I've had the most access to hunt the most, they don't have, I'm typically, I don't feel like other than just pure luck and one of the neighbor's deer just happened to be walking by. I mean, I don't have that many big mature deer. So when I find one, I kind of have to stay on them because I don't feel like, it's not like I've got 10 shooters on this property and I'm kind of hunting for any of them. I'm usually kind of limited to the number of deer that I think are on the property that are, or, you know, frequently on the property that I want to hunt. So it just kind of, but I will say I never hunted that way, Jeff, until, or I never really made it a habit of hunting that way until, you know, more recently, several years where I've hunted places, like I said, that didn't have a high number of older age class deer. And it is, I don't know. I mean, I like it. It's kind of a whole new challenge to just set your focus on one thing, you know. And like you said, I do end up trying different things at some point. And so just, it's a whole different kind of game or puzzle that you're putting together, as opposed to just hunting the general deer herd and the general deer activity, you know. So, I don't know.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Because that's kind of what I do. I mean, it's like I pattern, bucks behavior within an area or a certain zone, and you know, it usually starts off, you know, feed in the early season, and then it gets on into, you know, I really start kind of hunting the does. I watch where certain doe herds go, and whenever the rut rolls around, I try to kind of key in on those places and the pinch points and the funnels, you know, around those bedding areas that those does really like.
I tell you something that I've been doing, it's been kind of cool to watch it happen. It's taken this long. I've mentioned this on the podcast in previous episodes since the Hurricane Ida. I guess that was last summer. Yeah. Last summer.
Good,
so
number up there.
Yeah, it did a lot of damage in my area, and specifically on my property, there was a tornado that came through, spun off, and it did a lot of damage. And I kind of had the idea in my mind that over time, with all the big root balls and laydowns in the hardwoods, it was going to create a lot of pinches and funnels in the travel routes and kind of change them. Mm-hmm. And I'm really just now getting to where I'm starting to see that. I've actually moved some cameras recently, and it's really cool to see how the deer are using. I guess they're kind of being forced. I guess they're not being forced. They can do whatever they want, but, you know, they're, for lack of a better way to put it, they're being forced to use these old existing travel routes, but kind of manipulated to go around these root balls, and it creates camera traps essentially, because you know, you look at an area coming out of a thick area into an open hardwood flat, for example, and there's trees laying kind of different ways and these big root ball systems that come up off of some of them, and if you look at it, I was looking at one today, there's let's say a kind of a transition line of thick hardwoods coming out of a pine thicket, and there's big open oak flats on either side of it. So, and that runs north and south, and so the deer are moving through there east to west through those hardwoods. And I'm looking at one side of it, and there's really only two areas that they can easily come out of that thicket and walk out in that flat without, you know, going through treetops and laydowns. Right. And so I got, you know, I've had success. I've put cameras on those two areas, and that's all the deer are funneling through there. So it's been kind of cool. I thought that was going to happen. It's really taken up until this year for, I guess, not only for me to figure it out, but for the deer to just kind of settle into how they're using. And, you know, it was a lot prettier before all those trees laid down, but now it's thicker, and I think
that undergrowth is going to be nice.
Yeah, it's creating a better habitat, and certainly creating a more predictable travel routes. So that's pretty cool.
So that's some of my favorite areas to hunt is, you know, you find these large pieces of property that have been either it's blown down or the trees have been submerged in water for a certain period of time. They're all fallen, and it creates such an amazing habitat. The understory starts to get thick, you know, and just provides a lot of bedding areas. And if it happens to be in an oak flat type area, now you have bedding being developed with feed, you know, and they can just bed up in these areas, and they have an oak tree just drop raining on them, you know, throughout certain parts of the season. And man, those are some of the best places that I've ever found to hunt.
I've noticed, I wonder about y'all, but I've noticed more acorns dropping the last week and a half, 2 weeks. I mean, it's really picked up. Have y'all seen that?
Well, so in the areas that I've been hunting, it's actually been a good season for the acorns. We had good early mass, and they're steadily dropping. I've found a couple trees that have yet to really start to fall, some nuttles really, and down in the swamp. And that's really what the deer like to hone in on. And I hung a camera and just been waiting for it. And I've been having some deer coming through. It's like they were checking it out the first week, and then it started to drop a little, and now they're in there pretty heavy. And so it looks a lot better than it did last year or even the year before. Last year, I wasn't finding any red oaks dropping in any of the areas. But this year is pretty damn good. So now I kind of know the cycle for the areas I've been hunting.
Yeah.
The area in particular I'm talking about, I've only been in there for 3 years. So, you know, trying to figure that cycle out, it takes about that long. So
there's a lot of conversation on a lot of different podcasts and different things about how to identify, you know, when you go into an area where there's not a lack of oaks or feed trees, what do you look for to identify which ones are the hottest or primary, so to speak?
In most cases, so they're not easy to find, but when you find it, you know exactly what you're looking at. So for example, one of the spots that I was hunting super early season, I got in there and did a little scouting preseason, found some really nice oak flats in like the head of a slough that had dried up. And so the grass is really tall now, you know, anywhere from, you know, waist high to head high grass. It's a canary grass. You know, it's real green in the early season, and we scout it out and get back in there early season after the season opens and hang a camera. Because what I'm looking at is an area surrounded by grass. It's got oak trees all throughout, but this one particular spot is beat down. The grass is, you know, 6 inches tall. There's dirt in some spots. It was so dry, though, you weren't really seeing a whole lot of deer sign. You weren't seeing a lot of tracks. I wasn't even finding a lot of deer crap underneath the trees, you know. And so that was kind of odd to me. I was wondering if it was pigs or armadillos or what was actually doing this. And so I started, you know, spreading out and going check other areas. And that was like the common thing. It was just, it just really beat down under those trees. And I think because it was so dry, and I don't really know why, but typically I find a lot of deer shit under these type of trees that they're really focusing on. But this season, for some reason, I wasn't finding that. And so it kind of had me a little perplexed. But that's just the case. It was just beat down, run down. I didn't necessarily know, you know, that at first when I found it, what was doing it. But yeah, it was certainly the deer. It wasn't pigs or anything like that. So, you know, I go in, if it's a real leafy area, you know, typically the leaves are either beat down. You'll notice whenever you step on it, it doesn't have that crunch to it. They still might be covering the ground, but it doesn't have that fluff or that mm-hmm. or that crunch when you're walking.
Like matted.
Walking yeah. through it. You just matted yeah. down. Yeah.
You can kind of tell that they're like, they've been like turned over and
yeah, pushed and turned right. and pushed yeah. and turned and pushed.
Yep. Exactly. But it was more difficult this season to really read it because of how, I think it's just because of how dry it was. You know, whenever the ground's moist, it's easier to see exactly what you're dealing with.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's funny to me, and we've said for a long time that we were going to have someone on that was, you know, more of an expert on all the different types of acorns that we have, oak trees that we have, and, you know, just kind of deep dive into that a little bit more. But it's always interesting to me that, in my experience, it's not like I may go to Levi's place, for example, and find a tree, and it's a red oak or whatever, insert whatever you want here, and they're just really tearing it up. And then I go to my place, and they're preferring another type of acorn, you know, same, similar type of amount of food on the ground, but they're just preferring, you know, one or the other. And I wonder if that has to do with the ripeness of the nut or just, you know, I don't know, just for whatever reason, the deer in that area, you know, I don't know. I'm always curious about, because I think across the board, everybody's, something that's happened to me recently that's a little bit perplexing. So, I've lived my whole life as a deer hunter looking for that hot white oak tree, right? White oaks tend to be, everybody, you know, and myself included, tend to see white oaks being the preferred acorn of the white-tailed deer in the South, you know. And I have a white oak tree. It's really the only one. I have plenty of white oak trees, but they're not all dropping this year. And, you know, they're not a tree that drops every year anyway. Okay. So I really only have one, which here on a side note, the white oak trees in my yard, they drop every year. Why is that? They literally do. Like, I have a bunch of white oak trees right around my house. And some years it's more than others, but they drop enough. Like, if they were out in the woods, they would be legit.
That would be the X.
Every year. But the white oaks that are out in the woods, they don't drop every year. And I can't figure that out. But anyway, I do have one white oak tree that's dropping, and it just doesn't have deer. I mean, I put a camera on it a couple weeks ago, and I had a few deer throughout the week passing through there. But, you know, in all of my years of hunting, I've just kind of have always been taught and whatnot to look for that. That's like the go-to tree. And I have this one. It's in a perfect spot. It would be easy to hunt. And they're just not hitting it. But, I mean, they're eating the red oaks and stuff around it. But they're not eating it at the way that that deer typically do. And it's just always – it's always a real, I guess, interesting and confusing at the same time to me.
Yeah.
How they choose – you know what?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like fruit that we eat. We don't eat fruit that doesn't taste good. You know, you can have two orange trees and they taste completely different and they're 30 feet apart, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to eat something that's bitter or something that's sour.
Yeah.
And, you know, deer have the same thing. It's what's going to be the most palatable to them. That's it. And, like you say, with the white oaks, you know, they start dropping early season. So we're trying to get in there early, get that jump, that October buck, basically. That's what's going through my mind anyway. And so that's kind of what I like to try to focus on. But, you know, if there's not a lot of oak, if there's not a lot of white oaks on the property and, you know, the numbers are limited, then it's about, I guess, how – what is that? What's the quality of that fruit to that deer? If it's not a good quality, you know, acorn to them, then they're gonna go to the next best tree, which is probably those red oaks. You know, yeah. they really love those red oaks. They only get them every 2 years.
Yeah.
So I find that you know, deer, they eat these overcups early season. If you can't find white oaks, you can find an overcup that's dropping probably. They don't really like the overcups I find. They really rather be eating on these cow oaks or these nuttles. And whenever the red oaks start dropping, they're all over them. And I find the red oaks that they tend to eat, it's not like a specific tree when it comes to a red oak. They'll kind of browse through like red oaks. But when it comes to like a nuttle or overcup or white oak, it's a very specific tree.
Yeah.
You know, you have
Levi.
These oak trees dropping all over the place down in the swamp, and it's, you know, half of them aren't even being touched. All the acorns are going rotten.
This is intriguing me a lot.
Hey, it's Brian Chamberlain with Movement Mortgage. We're happy to be back for our second year supporting Louisiana Bowhunter. Just want to let you know that we're here for all of your mortgage needs, whether it's a purchase, a refinance, a renovation loan, or to take equity out of your home. We're also an equal opportunity lender, so whether you shoot a crossbow, a compound bow, a fixed blade, or an expandable, we're here for all of your mortgage needs. You can reach us at 504-228-3780 or at chamberlainteam@movement.com. Movement Mortgage, NMLS number 39179, Brian Chamberlain, NMLS number 114586, licensed in Louisiana, Texas, Mississippi, and Florida.
Levi, you have a pretty good diversity at your place. Is there a pattern to what they prefer in your part of the world?
Not all trees.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm with Jeff, and I'll actually agree with him too. Another thing he said with like little pin oaks, which is a red oak too.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to see exactly what Jeff just said, that, you know, you may see a group of pin oaks out there, and you'll see deer browse around several trees that may be in a group that they'll be eating on. But on our place, if you can find a nuttall tree that they are hitting, you better bring your tent and your stand and set up on it. Because
do you think it could be just a matter of, like, the pin oaks and red oaks typically drop in a lot higher volume than some of these other larger acorns? Could it just be that browsing activity just has to do with, you know, when they go to a white oak, they're really focused because it's a big acorn and it's all right there around that one tree typically, unless you just are fortunate enough to have, you know, a group of them. But, you know, I know in my experience typically, like, you'll find pin oak trees kind of bunched up and it'll just be a gravel, you know, almost gravel with them. They'll be everywhere. And so it's just a matter of there's so much more on the ground that they, you know, their browsing habit is kind of more defined by how much of it is there as opposed to a singular tree that they're focused on. You know, maybe it's that and not necessarily the nut itself.
Yeah, yeah. A lot more to choose from, right? You know, it's like kind of walking into an orchard, you know, everybody, you're going to try to taste the fruit off of a few of them. And, you know, there's probably, you know, you probably have multiple trees in an orchard that's producing good fruit versus, you know, trying to find that one tree that's growing by itself, that one white oak that is providing the type of fruit that they want.
Yeah.
You know, that's just how I see it or how I think about it in my mind.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know, we don't have a lot of white oaks on our place. We've got some of the swamp chestnuts, which those are in the white oak family. But as far as like your typical, what I'm calling a white oak, your standard white oak with the almost golf ball size acorns, we don't really have a lot of those. Maybe we've got one that I know of that was actually planted out in that CRP. And then other than swamp chestnuts, I mean, we really don't have a lot of white oaks over there on our property.
Yeah.
There's a few, but not many.
It's a finicky tree, too.
I was told one time, learned or was told or something, that a white oak could be as much as like every 5 years that it actually produces a a full crop. Like I said, the ones in my yard don't follow that, and I have no idea. Like that, seriously. I mean, it's funny, but I'm being like, it doesn't make sense. Like how? What's different?
Every single year.
What's different about the trees around my house and the ones in the woods 200 yards behind my house? What's the difference?
Brandy's out there in the middle of the night fertilizing.
I guess
just to mess you up.
That's a funny story.
That's probably what it is. You know, you cut the grass, the mulch and mower, and
it may be. The dog pisses
wrong shit.
I actually had my kids when they were younger one time. I gave them both a 5-gallon bucket, and I was like, "Get to work." And I filled up
and
buckets.
You bring it out in the woods and you throw it out there, and nothing eats it.
No, nothing but hogs. The hogs ate it.
Nothing but hogs.
Yeah, it's like they know. That's them residential acres. We're not eating right. Those. It's like that.
The next time you talk to Michael Pepper, I have seen that man with tarps out there in his yard
collecting.
Yes,
that's a pretty good idea, actually.
Yeah, it works,
dude.
Yeah.
I got one of those trampolines with the net thing around it, you know, for the kids. They ain't jumped on it in 3 years, but it's right out there under all those trees. I bet you if I got out on that thing, I could fill up a 3-gallon bucket full of acorns right now. I didn't even thought about that, but I bet you that's a natural catch-all right there.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So, Colin had a tier list we were going to do. We've been doing tier lists this season on the podcast. So Colin had one we're going to do. So I'm going to let him jump into that before we get too further down the road.
All right. So this you have your button ready, Locke?
My button?
The sound?
Which one you want?
This week's tier list is favorite trail cameras.
That wasn't the right button.
That wasn't it. There you go. Favorite trail cameras.
Okay. Do you know how the tier list works, Jeff?
No, I don't.
Okay, so instead of doing a top 10, we just do a tier list. So we have three tiers. And so you have tier 3, tier 2, and tier 1. And tier 3 is like the least favorite, and tier 1 is the best. So, like, if,
right.
You know, so we just kind of all rank things in tiers. So we go around the room and... I know you said you just started running trail cameras, so you may have to just bullshit your way through this, but but that's all right. So since you started, this is your baby, Colin. You started.
All right, so my tier 3 is the Walmart $25 Tasco, because I don't really have good luck with – I haven't had good luck with trail cameras, so – I didn't want to spend like $150 anymore, so for it to stop working, so I'll go spend $30, and they work. So then they've been working good. So don't you have some of those, Locke?
I have like 10 of them, and yeah.
They're slept on. I'm telling you.
I have 10 of them, and I have bought 10, and two of them don't work, and one of them. It works. The problem is the battery. I broke a piece of plastic on the battery tray, and the battery tray won't stay in there. Like if you hold your finger on it, the camera actually works. So it's been 4 or 5 years since I started buying them, and in 4 or 5 years, I've only had one quit working. Like you know, actual the function of the camera quit working. They are rock solid.
Yep.
So yeah,
you were actually the one who kind of. When I came up,
telling you,
2 years ago to your dad's place, and they were littered out there, and I'm like, you know what? Let me give these things a try,
dude. They're super legit. Yep. Tasco. They got an 8 megapixel and a 10 megapixel. The 10 megapixel is a whopping $39.99, and the 8 megapixel is $29.99.
Yeah. Yep. So that's my tier 3.
20.
Yeah, it costs more to put batteries in them throughout the season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Levi.
Probably I'm going to go with I ran Bushnells for a long, long time. Not the cellular ones, just the regular ones.
It's pronounced Bushnell.
Bushnells.
Bushnell. Bushnell.
A Bushnell.
Bushnell. Okay, Bushnell.
Mending redneck. Bushnell.
I'm a burning Bushnell.
You don't know Bushnells out there? Yeah. Bushnell. All right, Jeff.
But I had good luck out of those. They're decent. So, I've got one left.
So. I'd have to say the Wild Game Innovations, because it's really the only other camera I've used. But they did. They gave me a headache. So the cameras, they work most of the time, but it's just the functions, making sure it's turned on. I just screwed up so much trying to run these Wild Game Innovation cams that I just gave it up altogether. I bought two initially like 7 years ago, and I tried to run them on and off here. Nothing really consistent. You know, I'd let them soak for 2 weeks. I'd go get my card out, and there was
nothing.
Pictures on
there's nothing.
Camera on. What was going on?
Just some bullshit.
It was always some bullshit.
I have never used.
That's
one.
That's how I feel about them.
I've never used one. Never.
Yeah.
I was over it. That's why I just
Hey guys, hunting season is finally upon us. We're starting to feel some of that fall weather. And if you've had some success, or you're expecting to, and you're looking for taxidermy work, contact our friend Brian Anders at The Taxidermy Shop, located at 2582 Highway 48, Liberty, Mississippi, conveniently located right in between Centerville, Liberty, and Gloucester. Whether you're chasing deer and ducks in the fall, big gobblers in the spring, or you land that trophy fish, give Brian Anders a call at The Taxidermy Shop at 601-248-6945. The Taxidermy Shop is family-owned and operated. Not too big, not too small, offering quality work in a timely manner. Call Brian Anders at The Taxidermy Shop, 601-248-6945, or check them out on Instagram at The Taxidermy Shop. So I'm going to...
Been using cans for a long time.
So I'm going to go on my tier three, and it is tier three, but it's mostly because I'm putting it tier three because I haven't used it in a long time, is the Primos Truth Cams. And they were pretty solid. Honestly, I haven't bought one in a long time. But in the past, I've had three or four of them and had a couple of them get stolen by oil field workers. And
that's always nice.
Yeah. In my experience, they were easy to use, like the control part of them, user-friendly, so to speak. And they were always really solid. So I'm going to put them at tier three because I know they're a pretty good camera. But I put an asterisk by it that I haven't had one in so long that I don't know what any of the newer models, if they're even still making them. I know they made several models after the ones that I had, and I don't know how those were. But the ones I had way back when, probably 10-plus years ago, were pretty solid. So, moving to Tier 2, Colin.
I think I'm going to go with the Tacticam. And I honestly don't have any complaints. It's the first and only cell cam, the first and only cell cam that I have that I've run for over a year without it just randomly stop working. So,
okay.
It's been good to me so far.
All right. Levi.
Tacticam. This is the first year I've ran them, and knock on wood, I hadn't had any problems out of them. I love them. They have been flawless. I only got three of them, but I will probably end up buying more next year.
Yep.
Jeff?
All right, so I'd have to say the Spy Point. I bought last year two Spy Point micro LTEs, and goodness gracious, what a... I was climbing trees to hang, optional antennas and shit 20 foot up in the air to get these damn things to work. And it's like, whenever you go, you decide to move the camera, it's a lot of work. So, those things suck.
So I'll say,
look, if you can find a great place to put them where they'll send you pictures to your phone in a food plot, you hang them, you leave them, and that's it. Change the batteries.
I've heard you pretty much have to hang those on the actual cell tower itself.
Yeah, all right. That's right.
So I have a complete different experience here, okay? So I have now, from a quality perspective, I've had bad luck with Spy Point. But from a working perspective, when they do work, I've had good luck. And I've have, if you'll remember, Colin, in Kansas, I had a cell camera in a spot, and it took pictures for a week, and it quit sending pictures. And I took a Spy Point and replaced it a month later, and it worked flawlessly in that same on the same tree. And I have two of the little micro cell cams right now, and they worked all from they worked in Kansas August through October, and now I've brought them home and they're working in Louisiana, and it follows the suit that I first said. I also had a whole bunch, probably I say a whole bunch being four or five of the I can't remember what they called them, Force 10s. It's like just the basic 10 megapixel basic camera, not cell camera, Spy Points. And those cameras worked really good, except they didn't last, the quality sucked. Like, you put them out, and I mean, they cost like $69, $70. You put them out, they work good for a season, and then you get them out the next year, and they just don't come on ever again. They just don't work again. They just stop working for no reason. And
yep.
So when they did work, they seemed to be really good, like trigger speed, you know, and not missing pictures, and all that stuff seemed to be good. But the, you know, my problem was they all ended up breaking after a year and a half for some reason. So I have, but I'll say I've got two of the newer model micro cell cams, and they're one of them I got last year and one of them I got this year. They're both working well. So I'm going to go tier two, and I'm going to go with the Moultrie Mobile series of cameras. I'm using a bunch of those now. I've got six of them right now. My dad's got a couple as well. And I don't really have anything negative to say about them. One thing about them that's perplexing to me is I've got three different model cameras, and they're all exactly the same. Like, they keep putting out these new, like, one of them's called a Delta, one of them's called a XO, and one of them's called a Base. But they're the same camera. Like, they have a slightly different color plastic, like three different shades of dark brown. But other than that, on the new Base camera, they changed the on-off switch to just a toggle switch instead of a button you have to hold down, which is nice. Yes. You know, just a toggle switch instead of hold the button down till the lights flash or hold it down till they flash off. But other than that, they're all exactly the same. And I've had four of them for – so the two Delta cams are 2 years old. The two XO cams are a year old. And I got the two Base cams this year. And they're all working perfectly. And the Moultrie Mobile app and everything works really well. I've been very satisfied with them. So I'm putting them as tier two. I probably could put them as tier one, but I got another idea for that. So, but that I haven't tried Tacticam. And the only reason I didn't was because I couldn't find them. They were out of stock everywhere when I went to buy some, and I ended up going Moultrie, just kind of going out with that. So those have been good. All right, tier one.
I got the solution.
Tier one, Colin, go.
Tier one for me is the Cuddyback Cuddy Link system. I've run it for 2 years now, and I absolutely love it. Just being able to like link cameras all throughout the woods, and then I don't even have like you can set the Cuddy Link system up to where they all come back to like one, like your home camera is a cell cam and it sends you. I don't have that. So mine, I'll just send it to one camera. And then when I go to my place, I just pull one card, all the cameras. You can link up to like 16 cameras, and it's super easy to set up, and it's just worked really, really good for me. You can space them out and kind of catch a big range of, you really kind of like hone in on like one area, just put like a, you know, six or seven out. And so that's my tier one.
I've never tried it, but it is an interesting technology.
Yep.
All right, Levi. Tier one.
Reconyx. Everybody fringes when they see how much they cost. But
I got to pay for my house first before I can buy those.
Is that why they actually work?
Dude, my dad bought the first one that we ever had probably 12 years ago, probably. And we normally used to buy just like maybe one a year. And we have like 14 Reconyx cameras and have never, I repeat, never had a problem out of one of them.
Cell cams?
No.
Oh.
I don't have any Reconyx cell cameras. I can't speak for that. But just the standard Hyperfire.
Yeah.
I think they had the 550, the 550 and the 650 Hyperfires. They are absolutely bulletproof.
And I've heard good things about them.
They take like 40,000 pictures on one set of batteries. So you put a set of batteries in them at the beginning of the year in late summer, and you don't have to put batteries in them again. So
that's good.
Yeah. All right, Jeff, tier one.
So tier one, I'd have to say Spy Point. You know, disclaimer, I haven't used them for an entire season yet, but you know, I really like the way that they.
Wait, didn't you say tier two was Spy Point?
No, yeah. All right, Tacticam. Sorry, misspoke.
Yeah.
Okay, Tacticam.
So the Tacticams I found, you know, work really well in the remote locations. I haven't found a place yet that they didn't pick up a signal and send to my phone. So I really like that, you know. But yet again, I haven't used them for more. For even a season yet, but they've been working out pretty well for me. I've got 11 of them, actually 9 of them out right now, and I've only had to replace batteries on one of them so far this season. So everything's been working out pretty well with them.
They got good. Yep. Everybody seems to love them. All right,
mine's going good.
Tacticams are awesome. I would if we had a cell phone list for cameras, that would absolutely be my number one. Especially, you can't beat the price.
Yeah.
So, good.
I'm going to go, my tier one's going to be Wise Eye, because it's a local company. They're made right here in Pride, Louisiana. And they're not the cheapest camera. And they're obviously not as widely distributed as some of the big brands. But they make an exceptional product. And, I have done some, I've messed around with them some. I haven't ran a lot of them personally, you know, on my own properties and stuff, but I've looked at them and I've played around with them a good bit, and they make a really good product. So between just the overall quality and review of the camera, plus the fact that it's a Louisiana company, I think that, I've never read a negative review about them, and, they've got some proprietary software that makes them really kind of top of the list in the cell phone and the cell camera game. But they also focus on picture quality. That's kind of one of their sales points. And if you look at some of what they produce, just, you know, you don't really think about, at least I don't so much, like talking about the Tascow cameras. So, like, the Tascow cameras are flawless in terms of battery life and dependability and all that, but the truth of it is, it's not a great picture. I mean, they do a great job of just giving you the basic info that you need, you know, what time the deer are coming through, being dependable to actually take a picture when it's supposed to, and you can see well enough, but, you know, I mean, when you get foggy or at nighttime, I mean, it's not, I mean, it's obviously a cheaper camera. It's not a super great picture. Wise Eyes has probably the best lens and camera as far as that goes. And, you know, you get to like where I'm at right now, where you got cameras scattered out in the woods on trails, and you don't always have a deer right in center frame where you can really see it, and you're trying to determine, is this a mature buck on his feet during the rut, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I can easily see where that picture quality makes a big difference. So those are pretty impressive, and people, you know, like I said, Louisiana company, should check them out. They're making a hell of a product. So that's your tier list for this year's podcast. Thanks to Colin.
Yep.
Jeff, we kind of have gone deep into this podcast without ever getting here, but whenever we have a guest, we always get that guest to kind of tell us about their setup. So, like, your bow, what you're shooting, you know, how you got everything set up. What are you doing with all that?
Yeah, so, I'm shooting a Bowtech, a SR6, and, you know, I have a Spot Hog. It's a 3-pin adjustable sight, the Hogfather, quad rest. I don't run a stabilizer or anything. Just keep it pretty basic because the way I hunt, I like to keep my bow pretty light. Do a lot of run and gun or hunt from the ground. You know, steel hunt type methods. So just keep it pretty basic. Not too much on it.
What kind of broadhead you shooting?
So I went down the whole rabbit hole on that one. I am now shooting a Cayuga, a 175 grain double blade single bevel with bleeders on it. It's basically a 4-blade broadhead with some small bleeders on it. But thing hits like a hammer. There's a drastic difference that I've noticed between shooting expandable and a fixed blade. And it's like whenever I shoot, you know, I'll go rifle hunting every now and again. I'm pretty strict about my bow hunting. I haven't picked up a rifle yet this season, but you know, I do like to go rifle hunting every now and again. And I'm not taking a 270, you know, I'm taking a 45-70 and I'm knocking them down. And that's kind of how I feel with my setup and my bow. I'm not shooting a super crazy heavy arrow. It's like right at 500 grains. But, you know, it's like that thing zips through them and they don't go far. They don't typically even run whenever it hits them or zips through them. It's usually about a 60 or 70 yard recovery, and they do run. That's about as far as they go.
That's what everybody says. They say, you know, that they don't feel it or they don't really know what happened, or that's kind of what they say. Do you, like, in your experience, like, when you shoot an animal, like, is it bleeding a lot or is it not bleeding that much, or mm-hmm. how do you feel?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like I went through that whole cycle because, you know, I've had some pretty serious mishaps and you know, so I went through the whole cycle. Like, I want a great blood trail. Oh, well, this will give you a great blood trail, you know, expandable or whatever. And then, yeah, it does on some shots, and then on other shots it doesn't. And then I don't even get a pass through. Now I'm really freaking out. And, you know, I'm not the best archer. I'm pretty good. I've been shooting since I was a little kid, but I make mistakes, and we all see deer ducking arrows and flinching and making all this movement. And I've witnessed that. You know, I've shot a 150-inch deer on public land here in Louisiana right in the fucking elbow with a with a Schwacker. You know what I mean? It's like that thing looks like a fucking S. You know what I mean? Like, if I'd have had this Cayuga on there, that'd be a dead deer. That's a fact, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. And so, and I've gone back and forth over the years. I've gone from the fixed blade back to, you know, the Grim Reaper, and I really like those. If I was going to shoot an expandable, it would certainly be a Grim Reaper.
It's Mr. Grim Reaper up there.
But yeah, I've shot the, you know, Valkyrie and the Cayugas and VPAs, and when, you know, I've shot all that shit, and I just really like these Cayugas. Yeah, whenever I shoot them into my target, when you pull the arrow out of the target, you have to twist it out. You can't just pull it straight out. You have to follow the entry on the way out and try not to unscrew it when you do it.
Yeah. Well,
you know what it's doing to that flesh as it's ripping through there.
Yeah. So you mentioned you do a lot of hunting from the ground. I just kind of, as we wind down here, I want you to kind of talk a little bit about that. I mean, what your general, like, take it from a very high level perspective, not necessarily drilling down on one specific thing, but, you know, what is your general approach to trying to hunt from the ground with a bow and arrow? Because that's something that's becoming more popular. People are trying to push themselves and challenge, you know, that challenge. And so I'm curious, like, what's your approach to it?
Yeah, so, I mean, let me kind of start out by saying just how I got into that. And it was really a really humble kind of, you know, leading into it because, you know, I just inherited a bow from my uncle. He passed away, and I decided I want to start bow hunting after killing a couple nice rifle deer. And, but, you know, I didn't have a lot of money or didn't really want to invest a lot into it at that point in time. So I just started walking around the woods looking for deer with my bow, and that's how it started. And, you know, early on, I had some pretty interesting encounters. Like, I remember, like, one of the first times I ever went bow hunting on a public piece of land. I was up in Tunica, and I asked some guys in the parking lot, where could I shoot a hog? And, you know, of course, they're going to go send me to the farthest damn corner from where any deer are. You know what I mean? And so just using my wits, I dropped down into the bottom. I noticed it was real sandy in the bottom, and I could walk real quiet through that sandy bottom. And I ended up running into a little bachelor group of deer, nice 8-point, little 6-point and a spike. And I had the opportunity at the 8-point and had a knock separate from my arrow whenever I drew my bow back. So it was a blunder, you know. I'm like trying to catch the arrow with my foot and shit from hitting the ground. It was just dumb. But I realized at that point, it was like, oh, okay, this is actually possible. Because from what I knew, you know, or what people were telling me at the time, trying to influence me, that wasn't something that was possible. And, you know, I kind of took that as a challenge. But now, whenever I get into it, you know, it's a lot more calculated. The hardest thing, you know, I go in, like I was saying earlier, I look for fresh sign. The best freshest sign to me is a fresh pair of tracks. And the most difficult thing is knowing when to check up or stop, you know? And so if you know the area well, you kind of get an idea of where these deer might be moving through or to, or one place to this next location, and why they're doing it. Is it feed or is it the bedding? And so you just kind of key in on that. And now I don't get as aggressive as I used to. I used to kind of get in really tight, but I'd end up spooking a lot of the deer that I might have had opportunities at. And I like to check up, and I start doing calling sequences, you know, get right on the edge of these bedding areas that I know that these deer are going into, and just, you know, you got to catch the deer on the right day. You know, they're in there, and they hear you. They might not react to it or respond, but in those situations that they do, you know, that's winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Hmm. Yep. So you've had a lot of success calling at deer on public land in the state of Louisiana.
I have had some pretty incredible success on areas that are unpressured. Yep. So I will... I'll kind of speak to it, area that I like to hunt. I don't really, you know. So a particular spot down here on the river, it was shut down for like 5 years and no hunting allowed. It was kind of been flooded. I think there was like an 18-month flood period in there. And when they finally opened it up, we got in there early season, and man, we were rattling and grunting bachelor groups of bucks in, like multiple. And it kind of blew my mind because I've been hunting another piece of public land that was literally, you know, 20 miles north of this location. And we had never witnessed anything like that before. And what it all boiled down to was the pressure. You know, how many people do you have in the woods that are actually educating those deer on, you know, on the calling sequences or whatever they're doing? You know, we did the same thing too, because there were certain situations where I have a bachelor group of bucks, a nice, you know, you got a 10 point, an 8 point, and like, I don't know, dumb little spike following them around. And, you know, you accidentally grunt at the wrong time. They're 70 yards out and they look over at you. They pinpoint you on the ground sitting there in that deadfall or whatever. And, you know, so I kind of had to learn those things too, you know, make sure that there's no line of sight. You're in a nice little thicket, but man, we've grunted them, rattling them in. And this buck that I killed in October, man, I snort wheezed at that thing. And that's what turned his ass on, a snort wheeze, you know. I was watching him. I watched him stand up out of his bed. I knew he was in there. My wife was hunting with me, and I was telling her all day. And she kept wanting to go deeper. And I was like, deeper? I was like, telling you, this buck is in this bedding area over here. And so we got on the backside of the bedding area, and we rattled and grunted. And this was all before lunch, and nothing happened. And went and took a break, and then got back in there and decided, you know, I told her, I said, we're going to set up tight. We're going to climb up in a tree though. And we're going to get right on top of this bedding area, 'cause I wanted to be able to see out into it. Climbed up in and, you know, threw out a couple grunts around, this was before the time change. So it must've been, 5 o'clock, 4:45. And I saw him stand up out of the bed in the thicket, and he was kind of browsing. He wasn't too worried about me. But then when I snort wheezed at him, it's like it turned on a switch. You know, he froze up and I couldn't really see that he was looking at me. But all of a sudden he disappeared. And then the next thing I know it, I see a tree off to the right of where he was at. And he's making a scrape and he's hooking the tree and shit shaking. And I don't know. He was hopped up because there was a doe in there with him or nearby, because there was some kind of commotion where he like must have like ran this doe off, and she got all bent out of shape and started blowing at him. And then he came in hot on me. He was pissed. Like, he was mad. He was ready to fight. And yeah, he got killed.
It's kind of crazy, because you just don't, awesome. You know, you don't, it just goes to show you. I guess you started out this episode by, like, encouraging me to just do something different, you know, to try to figure this deer out. And you don't right. hear a lot of people having success with those kind of things in the South, you know, at least especially not on public land. But, I mean, it does go to show you that pressure is everything. And I really believe that, you know, it's the number one factor, like, and all the things that create pressure are all wrapped up in that statement. You know, when I say that, I'm not just talking about just simply you being there, but, you know, the wind, the noise, and the time of year, and everything that you do. Like, I mean, pressure is everything. It is the main factor that you have
to. Yeah, and the interesting thing about that is, like, Kyler told me one day, is like, because – I went up there and I stayed at the camp with them, and I went hunting in a new area I'd never hunted before. You know, he invited me up there. He's like, you know, just come see what this is all about. And, you know, me and Ashley are like running into deer everywhere. We pop on this road. We're looking into these fields with these tall grass right across from this, you know, nice oak flats and select cut and deer all over the damn place. And I've never seen that. I've never seen 20 deer in a hunt before in my life. Like, I don't know what I heard people talk about it. And I was like, man, I didn't know what they were doing. You know, the buck chased these other two young bucks off, like the mature buck. And then he's kind of running around with these does, but you can't really tell if he's chasing them or just, you know, just deer doing deer things. And that's what I was talking to him about it, and he was like, bro, it's just deer being deer. They're unpressured. They're just doing what they normally do. That's how they would normally act. And it didn't really occur to me, you know, until he had said it. It's like, yeah, I guess in my perception, I think these deer are like the most paranoid animals that I've ever encountered in my life. But yeah, but really they're not. We make them like that. And that's what he had said. And it's true.
I think deer really are by nature extremely curious and even social to an extent animals.
They're very social animals.
And we're very, you know, what we do as hunters and really not as predators in their world is we change all that dynamic. And I think that it's, you know, it's something that a lot of people just don't ever get to see, really. You know, on rare occasion do they ever get to see it. And I'm talking about people that are only able to really hunt in the South on hunting clubs. So obviously everybody, you know, you can take the opportunity to go purchase a hunt somewhere on property that's better managed. But I'm just talking about the general life cycle of a hunter that, you know, is relegated to small property or hunting camp property. And our perception of what deer and deer behavior is a totally different thing from what's natural to the animal.
Right.
And you don't see that until you get to go hunt somewhere where the deer, like, literally, they'll run away from you, but they're going to stop and try to figure out what you are before they do, because they're just not, they don't associate you the same way they do with other threats, because you're not a threat to them on a day-to-day basis. And,
it's true. And the very next day, though, that spot got blew up by a bunch of crossbow hunters. So I was hella pissed.
Damn crossbow
hunters wearing orange, bro. That shit lights me up.
Yeah.
Last episode.
Yeah, let's not get into that. We did all that damage last episode.
You don't even
want to
hear
me
talk. You don't even want to hear it. I'm going to hit the mute button now.
Well, man, it's been a cool conversation. I'm glad you took the time to join us and just talk a little bit of deer hunting. And wish you the best of luck the rest of the season, man.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Same to you guys. You know, I'd just like to say, you know, in closing, you know, just take those opportunities, maybe step outside your boundaries, outside the box a little bit, and you know, maybe you think you'll fail, but what you'll do is learn, you know.
Yeah.
Never fail, just learn.
Yeah. It's good words of advice. Well, Levi, Colin, y'all got anything before I wrap this up?
No, I'm good.
All right, guys. It's the best time of the year. If the damn weather would just get right, it'd be even better. But, you know, it is Louisiana. But holidays are upon us. Check out LouisianaBowhunter.com. We got some merch out there. Great for stocking stuffers. New stuff going out in the stores and going online here any day now. So we appreciate all your support. And we appreciate you listening to the podcast. And we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast. If you have anybody you'd like to hear on the show, reach out to us at info@LouisianaBowhunter.com. And if you want to help support Louisiana Bowhunter, go by your local archery shop and pick up some merchandise. If you don't have any at your local shop, let us know and we'll reach out to them. Or pick up your gear at LouisianaBowhunter.com and we'll ship it out to you same day. See you next week.